I think it's pretty obvious that I'm not Seth, but for those of you who were hoping for Seth, I have good news. We'll be back next week. Today, the topic is worldview. Christianity is a worldview, and I think the only worldview that actually explains the world as we see it today. But let's start off with a definition of what we mean by worldview. Worldview is a perspective from which one sees and interprets the world. Or said another way, it's a collection of beliefs about life and the universe held by an individual or a group. The foundation of one's worldview is what you believe about how we got here. It's what you believe about origin. In today's world, there are two primary views of origin. One is creation. The other is naturalistic evolution. And how you treat these alternatives depends on how you view the Bible. We're going to first look at the account in Genesis of how the creation took place. You'll notice in the Genesis account that it is written as a historical account, as a documentary. It does not start off once upon a time, and it certainly does not start off long, long ago in a galaxy far, far away. Genesis 1 through 5, according to Genesis, God created the heavens and the earth. He said, "Let there be light." And there was evening, there was morning the first day. So the point of this is that God created the world and time on the first day. Time was created the first day of creation. If you look at Genesis 1 through 1:14, then there was the fourth day. God created the sun, the moon, and the stars to mark the seasons, days, and years. Time had already been created, but he gave the sun and the moon to enable us to keep track of days, years, and months. Some think that's out of sequence because there had to be the sun to create light. But if you remember in Genesis 1, first verse there, God's Spirit hovered over the face of the water. It's the same idea as we find in Revelation, where in the New Jerusalem there's no need for the sun because God is there and God provides the light. Throughout the Bible, the writers were careful to record the ages of the patriarchs, the Egyptian sojourn, the reign of the kings, the times of the prophets, and Jesus' birth and ministry were tied to historical characters prominent in Roman and Egyptian history. This next slide, we see the timeline. I don't expect you to be able to read that. It's rather small. But I do hope you can see in the upper left, there's a little round ball representing the earth. And in the lower right, there's a cross representing Jesus. And it indicates that there's about 4,000 years between those two events. And we know that being 2016, we can add 2,000 to 16 to 4,000, and we get about 6,000 years for the age of the earth. Now, if we look at the evolutionary point of view, about 14 billion years ago, the Big Bang gave birth to a universe containing pockets of dust. About 4.5 billion years ago, our solar system formed via the accretion of dust into spheres. Earth is therefore roughly 4.5 billion years old. Now, I got this from the website called Essential Humanities. And I had to look up accretion because I had not come across that word before, but it just means that somehow the dust particles clump together for some unknown process. Moving on, life began about 3.5 billion years ago with the appearance of single-celled marine organisms. Since then, evolution has continually given rise to new forms of life. Now, this is the prevalent view that is taught in high schools and universities across our nation. Joy and I like to visit national parks, and we've noticed that any park with geological features will have displays depicting an old earth. And some will even show what that particular site may have looked like 300,000, 500,000 years ago, as if somehow they knew. The next picture here is an evolutionary timeline. These are common in textbooks. The timeline starts about 4.6 billion years ago and ends at the present. It's hard to see, but the timeline progresses from small sea creatures to fish, then to lizards, dinosaurs, four-legged animals, and finally man. The next picture shows the widely accepted evolution of monkeys to apes to man, with Neanderthal thrown in. And the next picture, I've included Fred Flintstone and the gang. I included this one because it pushes the idea that early humans were cavemen and they lived in the Stone Age. This is very subtle, but it seems to imply that early humans were not very smart and they had to discover everything about their world. So just how old is the Earth, or is the world? Is it 6,000 years, as the Bible would have us believe, or is it 4.6 billion? This disparity is quite significant. That's six orders of magnitude. Can it be rectified? Some Christians say yes. Some say no, you have to discard the science. Some say yes, you can assume some other things. And we'll look at the assumptions that we make or attempts to reconcile. Some say that actually the days of creation were long periods of time, much longer than a normal day. Hugh Ross is a famous old earth Christian who claims that the days of creation were long periods of time, and even the order of the creation days needs to be altered a little bit to get the events in the right sequence. If the days of creation were spread over 4.6 billion years, each day would have to be 750 million years long. Now that's a lot of death and decay just to get to the first man, Adam. Some believe that God created life but guided evolution, the evolutionary process, to give us the diversity of life that we see today in our world. And others look at the creation account as an allegory that can't be taken literally. The creation account is presented in historical structure with specific times. It's not presented as an allegory. So we get to the next real question here. Maybe the question you've been waiting for. Does it matter? Well, I would say that it does matter, but it does not. It's not a matter of salvation. Whether you believe that the earth is young or believe that the earth is old, it may not have any impact on your salvation. But it is not compatible with the biblical account. The biblical account of creation is an eyewitness account that has not changed since it was written. However, the ideas that we have from science change periodically. And we're going to look at one brief example. The origin of the Big Bang. For many years, the biblical account of creation was accepted as the explanation of creation. In fact, the belief that God created an orderly universe that could be understood gave rise to science and to the study of how our world operates. Galileo and Newton were Christians, and so were many of the other early scientists. Things changed in the 1800s when Darwin proposed an origin of life that excluded God. As his idea caught on and science was no longer guided by biblical understanding, the universe was assumed to have always existed. The universe was infinite and unchanging. The cosmos was all that was, all that is, all that ever will be. But in 1929, Edwin Hubble amazed the scientific community by declaring that the universe was expanding. So if the universe was expanding, and it had to be smaller at some time long ago. Now, it took a while for this idea to catch on. People rejected it at first. But ultimately, it gave rise to the Big Bang theory that we talked about earlier. Science was forced to change its beliefs about the eternal universe. It was changing. And if it was changing, if it had a beginning, then it is not infinite, but it's finite. Now we'll look at how the other Bible writers view the creation account. First of all, in the biblical account, the Hebrew word used for day, yom, is the same throughout the Old Testament. that refers to one 24-hour period of time. So the Bible does not consider the creation days to be longer than a normal day. In Genesis 1:31, God saw all he had made, and it was very good. There was evening, there was morning, the sixth day. It is difficult to imagine how God would look at a 4-billion-year-old earth with multiple generations of death and decay and say that it was very good. Exodus 20:8-11. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son, your daughter, nor your maidservant, your manservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that's in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath and made it holy. Why would the creation week be used as the model for the Israelites' work week if it had actually been billions of years rather than 6 literal days? In Psalm 33:6-9, we find, by the word of the Lord were the heavens made, their starry host by the breath of his mouth. He gathers the waters of the sea in jars. He puts the deep into storehouses. Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the people of the world revere him. For he spoke, and it came to be. He commanded it, and it stood firm. Now these verses speak of instantaneous creation, with no need for a big bang, or billions of years for dust particles to clump together. In Hebrews 11:3, by faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. Here Paul confirms what David wrote in Psalm 33, that God spoke the universe into existence. It was not made of pre-existing material. Romans 1:20. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. Here Paul refers to the creation as an event. A world created out of chaos of the Big Bang could not possibly demonstrate God's eternal power and divine nature. God created a perfect world. Mark 10:6. Jesus here is answering the question of the Pharisees about divorce. And he said, but at the beginning of creation, God created them male and female. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate. Jesus refers to the creation as an event, and he would have known, since he was there, because John tells us that all things were made through him, and without him nothing that has been made was made. So we can see that the other Bible writers treat creation as an actual one-time event. Also, the Bible gives us reasons to reject the caveman idea of early humans. The Bible shows that humans were created with some innate abilities, not as knuckle-dragging cavemen living in a Stone Age existence. In Genesis 4:17, we find that Cain was building a city when his son Enoch was born. He obviously was planning on a large family. In Genesis 4:22, 5 generations after Adam, they were forging tools of bronze and iron. So hardly living in the Stone Age. And this certainly does not support the Fred Flintstone image. Now, there are problems when we try to change the Bible narrative to agree with science. I want to look at a few of those. If you try to assume that, well, the Bible just kind of got it a little bit wrong, really the days were long, and you change the creation story, one of the things it does is it dilutes biblical authority. Now, as I said earlier, what you believe about the age of Earth is probably not a salvation issue for you, but it may be for the person sitting next to you. Seth mentioned 2 weeks ago about the problem of young people leaving the church. Now, this chart shows how the general population views creation versus evolution. This is from a 2014 Gallup survey. And the next slide shows how college education changes the percentages who believe that God created everything. This says a lot about what can happen to our sons and daughters when they go off to college. The next slide shows the results of a survey by the American Survey Group of young people in their 20s who attend church. The majority believes the Bible to be inspired, but at the same time, they believe that it contains errors. When asked to name an error that the Bible contains, 37% answered the age of the earth. And another 23% believe that God used evolution to change one kind of animal into another. Now, we claim to believe that the Bible is inerrant. In fact, if you go to our website, it says that we believe the Bible is without error, which is to say, the Bible is inerrant. But we often fail young people by not preparing them with reasons to believe the Bible. And when they're sent to high school and college where they're bombarded with naturalistic evolution, they have a change of mind. Evolution and the very old earth are presented as facts by people in authority in high schools and colleges. If we in the church truly believe that the Bible to be inerrant, then we need to be able to convince the next generation of the truth of Scripture. Otherwise, their belief that the Bible contains errors will undermine their faith. If the first book of the Bible is wrong, why believe the other 65 books? This definitely dilutes biblical authority. Now, if you're using your study notes that are in the bulletin, you'll notice that there's a lot more blanks on my handout than Seth normally has on his. And you'll also notice that I do not have the words highlighted that go in the blanks. So you'll have to pay a little more attention. But the first one there was dilutes, okay? And the next one here is diminishes. Another problem with trying to make the biblical account agree with science is that it diminishes the gospel message. The creation of a perfect world is central to the good news of Christ coming into the world. All creation was under God's curse. You remember in the Genesis account that the world was created without sin and without death. But in Genesis 3:7, because you listened to your wife and ate from the tree about which I commanded you, you must not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil, you will eat of it all the days of your life. Jesus came to take the sins of man and to reconcile us to God and save those who put their faith in him. Christ's death on the cross not only provides for our salvation, but will ultimately remove God's curse, and creation will be restored. Romans 8:19-23. The creation awaits in eager expectation for the sons of God to be revealed. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not of its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in the hope that the creation itself will be liberated from the bondage of decay and brought into the glorious freedom of children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. The restoration of all creation to its condition prior to the fall of man is central to the gospel message. Another problem with changing the biblical account to agree with science is that it ignores the evidence for creation and for a young earth. I'll briefly try to describe a few of these proofs of biblical record. First, life from non-life. We know that life does not come from non-life. There have been many experiments over the years to try to create life in a test tube by mixing together amino acids and exposing them to sunlight or exposing them to electrical charges to generate life. None of them have succeeded. Life does not come from non-life. The information of life, DNA. Prior to the discovery of DNA this past century, the cell was thought to be pretty simple. But that all changed when the molecule of DNA was found in every cell that contains instructions for the manufacture of proteins. The instructions are coded information, and information can only come from an intelligent source. Specified information does not arise without direction. Irreducible complexity is the idea that some body systems are too complex to have been developed in an evolutionary step-by-step process. In other words, all the parts had to be there at the same time in order for any of the parts to have any function or any purpose. This is the case of DNA, RNA, and proteins. DNA is the information. There's another molecule in the cell called RNA. RNA copies the DNA and assembles the amino acids into a certain sequence to make proteins. The DNA, the RNA, and the protein are all essential, and that none of them can exist without the others. The universe is finely tuned to support life on planet Earth. The distance from the sun, the speed of rotation, the angle of tilt of the Earth axis are all critical to the Earth being a habitable environment. It's easy to see how the 5-hour difference between the length of days in the summer to winter affects our comfort and survival. If you've been cold the past month, you know that 5 hours less daylight really does change the temperature of our environment. If the Earth was 4.6 billion years old, the ocean should contain more salt. They should be more like the Great Salt Lake or the Dead Sea. Also, the sea floor should be covered with thick layers of sediment, but it isn't. Fossilized bones have been found that contain soft tissue that could not have survived for billions of years. Also, the Earth's magnetic field has decayed about 10% in the last 150 years. It could not have survived for billions of years. In spite of the claims that you may hear about the old Earth, no one can measure Earth's age. Radiometric dating techniques that are often cited are based on assumptions that cannot be proven and cannot be verified, and they do not work on things of known age. When I hear in the news that scientists have found a very old rock, I always wonder about that because it seems to me that everything here is the same age. So if you think that I'm as old as the hills, you're absolutely right. And the dust I'm made of is the same age as the dust you're made of. And so we're all fairly old. So now, as Seth would say, what's the takeaway? And that's the good question here from all this. The takeaway is, be careful how you adjust your beliefs and your worldview to accommodate man-made ideas that cannot be proven and have not been proven. There is evidence for a young Earth and creation, as we have seen, but there are also things that make our world seem very old. Also, there are the words in 2 Peter about a day being like 1,000 years or 1,000 years being like a day. So perhaps the days of creation could be long periods of time. The message of 2 Peter is not that days can be years long, but that God is not bound by time as we are. He exists outside the boundaries of time. So 2 Peter does not give us permission to assume that the days of creation were long periods of time. The argument for an old earth can be very logical and very appealing. But the message of the Old Testament and the New Testament is that God is not bound by logic, by the laws of nature, or by the laws of physics. What is logical about the sun standing still in the sky to give more daylight for the battle, or the parting of the Red Sea, or Jesus walking on water, or Jesus calming the storm, or raising the dead? The miracles show conclusively that God operates outside the laws that control our world. He is not bound by the laws of science in creating and sustaining the universe. There are scientists who have come to faith in God because of the abundance of evidence that points to an intelligent creator. So don't be afraid to challenge the old earth evolutionist, because creation reveals the God that we serve. The real takeaway is found in Colossians 2:8, where Paul wrote, "See to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and the basic principles of this world, rather than on Christ." One story, and then I'll close. Many years ago, the Russians put the first man into space. In 1961, cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin circled the Earth and got to see our blue-green orb from outer space. Upon his return, he proudly announced that he did not see God as on his flight through the heavens. But how could he have seen God? His worldview excluded God. He saw the beauty of God's creation that declares God's eternal power and divine nature, but he couldn't see God because he was taken captive by a hollow and deceptive philosophy. Our worldview is important, and as Christians, we need to see and interpret the world as God has revealed it through his word. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for your word that reveals yourself to us. Father, I thank you for the creation that also shows us your divine nature, your eternal power. Father, I pray that we will not be taken captive by the hollow and deceptive philosophy that permeates our culture, but that we will see the truth of your word and that we will be convinced that you created the world just as you said. Father, help us. In the name of your Son, amen. As is our tradition, we offer the invitation of Christ to anyone who wishes to respond this morning for prayers or to proclaim your faith in Christ. Thank you.
Would you stand with us, please?